At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Recording later than I wanted to do. I thought we'd have some news by today. Been kind of working the phones and hearing, hey, this may break and this may not, or it may be tonight or tomorrow. And so, sometimes that happens. Also tell you, too, the final book proofs for The Dude are in. Double check, make sure that the last changes are made and the file will head to print, and excited for you guys to have it. But I'm proud of the work. And the more times that I read it, and the more times I look at it, the more eager I am for you guys to partake in the knowledge that I have been able to unearth for you. And this won't be the last book of this sort. And I learned a lot. I'll be honest with you. I learned a lot. And I remember, and I've told you guys before, Scott Kennedy, guy that really helped me get my start in this industry. I remember one day Scott told me, he goes, you know, Steve, if we've seen it all and done it all, if there's something out there that interests us, then chances are it'll interest our readers. And I was so incredibly intrigued with some of the stories that I was able to find, and many of them over 100 years old. And some others not quite as old, but it's a book that I think every Mississippi State fan is going to want to read, and for a couple reasons. Why? Number one, there's not a lot of information out there by Duty Noble. People know the field. They don't understand why it's named after Duty Noble. They don't understand how significant he was as a student athlete, a coach, and certainly as an administrator. You're going to read all about that. And it's not just about Duty. There's some other things that kind of happened during his tenure that impacted the university that you need to know about. And as I've shared with you guys before, it's not just a rah-rah book. There's some things in there you're going to read about and be like, you know what, this sucks. I can't believe this happened. Can't believe this person did this. Or why were we short-sighted in this regard? Those are important topics. And so it's not some propaganda piece, I can assure you. There are going to be some things that you're going to read about going to make you uncomfortable. Some other things you're going to read about going to make you exceptionally proud. And that's the thing that I go back and you dig into these stories and you find one story and you try to find the counter to it and you research that and you kind of find out what's really the truth. Because the thing that I have learned is typically the person who speaks first tells a little bit of half-truth. Does that make sense? We can't wait to tell our story, and then that story never gets told, or if it does, it's very self-serving. You guys know what I'm talking about. But, it's been... I am a better Mississippi State fan having written this book. I have a greater understanding of our history and our legacy, our tradition, and the encumbrances that Mississippi State has faced over the years. And I think that's important to document. Because if we don't continue to reference the history, we will repeat it. And in many respects, we have. As I've shared with you guys before, chapter 5, I think, is a chapter that people are going to... There's going to be a lot of conversation about that chapter. And there's a lot of them that are hard-hitting. That's one... I go back and I read it and I think, I'm really glad that I was able to get to the bottom of this and get some information out there that is unbeknownst to the Mississippi State and Ole Miss public. But it kind of centers around why we didn't play 19, 12, 13, and 14. And you can check me on that. You can go to Wikipedia, whatever. You can just go Google Ole Miss 19-13 schedule and you'll see they played as an independent. They did not play in the SIAA teams, and there's a good reason for that. For years and years and years, I've asked people, why didn't we play? Why didn't we play those 3 years? And nobody had a good answer because nobody had the right answer. And now you do. Now you do. And it's one of those things, too. You know, we talk about this. Ole Miss has always been the in-state school that kind of tries to skirt the rules. Yeah, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I mean, this dates back to their infancy, you know. And so that's one consistency. And then some mistakes that we have made over the years kind of with hiring decisions and having people kind of interfere with the process. And that continues to happen. I mean, you know, that happened here recently. You know, we got ready to hire Jeff Lebby. You know, all the Jamie Chadwell stuff. You know, day one, I'm told Jamie Chadwell's not interested. And some people begin to continue to kind of trumpet and champion, say, yes, he is. You're wrong. Eventually, I got it in writing. And once I found out that, once I'm able to get that information in writing, I'm like, well, you know, we need to pull up anchor and head somewhere else. But there were some people, even to the very end, even the day before we interviewed Jeff Lebby officially, people were telling me, hey, don't give up on Chadwell. We weren't even talking to him anymore. But that wasn't what was being reported by some. Oh, yeah, Chadwell. Steve, you're wrong. And then later, I was accused of spiking the football. Well, you know, it's like there's only so many times I'm going to listen to somebody tell me I'm wrong when I know that I'm right. But again, we've had people that always feel like, hey, you know what? I know better than leadership. I know better than the people that are paid to make these decisions. And listen, I get it. You know, when you're a stockholder in Mississippi State Athletics, you're like, hey, I want some good return on my investment. And if I don't believe that I'm getting good leadership from the people in power, I'm going to voice those concerns. And you absolutely should. But at the end of the day, when a decision is made, we have to rally behind the university. Whether we agree with the decision or not, rally around the university and rally around each other. Because none of us have the corner of the market on good ideas. None of us do. We think we do, but we don't. And I think that's part of maturity. Is like, you know what, hey, this is what I wanted. This is who I pushed for. I didn't get it. But I want Mississippi State to be successful. And so I'm going to get behind the program, get behind this coach, behind this athletic director, behind this university president, because I love Mississippi State. And I'm not saying you got to have blind loyalty. You're not a robot. You got free will. It's a free country. But I think rooting against Mississippi State so we can say I told you so is wrong. I think it's absolutely wrong. It's detrimental to the university, detrimental to the program. I think it's unfair to our fans. But it happens. It does. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love them, and I plan to partake of the fine cuisine that they make available to the Bulldog public and beyond tomorrow. That's the plan, anyway. I'm going to go grab some Bulldog Burger Company, and I'm going to go eat at the float spot with Dana, and we're going to have a good time because I know I'm already looking forward to that meal. Right? I got no clue what I'm going to have for dinner tonight. I know what I'm going to have for lunch tomorrow. And I can't wait. Can't wait. I already know what I'm going to order. I know I'm going to get spring rolls too, because you know what? That's part of my beauty care regimen. It makes you and everybody around you better looking. Not only does it make you more beautiful, it improves your outlook. It's on the menu too, and that's not by accident. I love those spring rolls. I do. I could sit down sometimes and just have a whole order myself for lunch. But I don't know if the world's ready for that, you know. I'm trying to save the women for the rest of you, okay? If I started eating spring rolls every day for lunch, I don't know that you could put up with me. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive here in Stark, Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo. Lake Harbor Drive in the Richmond Flowood area. Get that chocolate shake to go. It'll top off a great meal. Great food at a great price. Great service. Great atmosphere. By people that know exactly what they're doing. You know, the Eat With Us group's been here a long time. They know how to feed folks. When you put your feet under their table, you're in for a dining experience. You're not just there to eat a meal. I love them. I absolutely do. So have a great restaurant, great quality restaurant hamburger when you're there. I can get that out. And enjoy your meal. Have an adult beverage. have a family night. Because when you ask your kids, hey, do you guys want to go to Bulldog Burger Company? You know exactly what they're going to say. Yes. Yes. So say yes to Bulldog Burger Company. Mom, dad, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa. Everybody loves Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's take a little time here together. Because I have done some research. Like, there are a couple things that I want to talk to you guys about. There are some storylines in the national media that are kind of based on some truisms that are not totally true. That's one of the reasons you come to me, right? It's like, Steve, I want the truth. The first thing that I want to tell you is after several phone calls over the course of the last week, I can tell you that right now, this whole 9-game SEC schedule is probably not going to happen anytime soon. Now, things can always change, but it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. Now, I kind of got caught up in the middle of that, too. You know, you started seeing these games of West Coast teams being canceled. Well, it makes perfect sense. But I'm told, and I don't know that we've discussed this, but, you know, South Carolina doesn't want to give up Clemson. Florida doesn't want to give up Florida State. We don't want to give up the four non-conference games either. And despite some rumors to the contrary, when this was voted on last, it wasn't even close. Now, a lot of people in the national media are like, hey, they're going to vote on this and nine-game schedule. Didn't happen. And it's because of the fact there wasn't enough support. Because, again, as I told you guys then, the money from ESPN is not worth our while as a league. There is no sense in setting up even a larger set of hurdles for SEC teams to make the playoff. And it's math, not magic. As shared with you guys before, if we play 16 non-conference games, 16, we got a chance to win all 16 of them. That's the nature of competition. And so whether that's part of a Power 5 mandate or something else, if we play 16 out-of-league teams, we could conceivably go 16-0. However, if we play 9 SEC games, we are assured of 8 wins and 8 losses. And those losses could knock somebody out of playoff, which is less money for the league. So that's, again, another kind of unintended consequence of a potential 9-game schedule. Why would we make it more difficult for our teams within this league to be bowl eligible? Why would we make it more difficult for our teams to make the playoffs? Why should we do anything just because the Big Ten does it? We shouldn't. If you recall, the Big Ten wanted to cancel football season back in 2020. And it was Greg Sankey that kind of led the charge to save college football. And he did. Again, I'm a big fan of Greg Sankey's. I can't say I always agree with everything, but he is a brilliant leader. Had a chance to interact with him a couple times one-on-one. And I told him, we were in Omaha, so hey, I just want to tell you, if nobody ever tells you this, thank you for saving college football. And because he has some humility about him, he goes, well, I've never heard it put quite like this, but it's true. Because you remember, the Big 12 was kind of the swing vote. And so Sankey and ACC leadership said, hey, we're going to play. We don't care what the Pac-12 and the Big 10 do. And, of course, Big 10, Pac-12 just married at the hip. Ridiculous. And so you get the Big 12 to go along, and then all of a sudden everybody else is like, okay, we'll play too. You know, and that's what it requires sometimes, is somebody to be a leader and kind of go against the current, right? That happens more times than not. Great leaders make unpopular decisions. And among his peer group, I don't know that that was really what they wanted. But nevertheless, it's what we got. And Greg Sankey, when we go back and rewrite the story of 2020 and document all that happened, Greg Sankey is going to appear to be a hero, and rightfully so. And Greg Sankey, whatever decisions that he makes, whatever presentations that he puts out to our membership, you can rest assured it's going to be well thought out. And it's going to be what he believes is best for the league. And, of course, the presidents have to vote on it. You know, Sankey's not a dictator. He's a commissioner. But there are a lot of people involved in this process that will tell you Greg Sankey is a great leader for the Southeastern Conference. Some wonder how long he'll continue to be commissioner. I've even had some people that said, you know what? With the work that Mark Keenum has done as a chairman of the FBS playoff committee, you know, he may end up being the SEC commissioner someday. Wouldn't that be interesting? Have a Bulldog in a big office. Yeah, finish up his tenure here, set a record historically of being the longest tenured Mississippi State president, and then go be the commissioner of the SEC until he retires. That'd be interesting, for sure. Now, let's talk a little bit about the scholarship stuff. We talk about, you know, the national media's put some things out there, and I have done some digging and talked to some people here, because, and I've read some of these articles too, and so many of them are just kind of parroting each other, and I don't know that any of them are correct. And that's not to cast stones at anybody. But this House settlement, of course, changes a lot. You know, there's the new NCAA roster limits for several sports. And so the roster limit now for football is 105. You can say, wow, that's a lot. Well, the roster was 120. And so in many respects, you're kind of eliminating walk-ons, but you're also retaining some walk-ons, but you're able to provide them with some financial aid from the athletic side. Many of these young men and women, they're involved in college athletics, their previous equivalency sport scholarship was supplemented by some academic aid. And so now you're going to cap the roster at 105. And my issue with that aspect of it is, if you had 120, you know, you got guys who can run your scout team. You got guys maybe later on that find a way to work their way into a scholarship. It helps your APR. It saves the financial burden on a lot of parents. You know, Cody Schecksnyder, remember him? Love Cody, man. Love him. Hate that he's at Ole Miss, but we love him. You know, Cody was our guy, and he was the guy that got the remaining scholarship as a senior. And they had the big Zoom call. His mom got to tell him. An amazing guy. Matter of fact, Cody was part of Alpha Dogs. Interviewed him about 2021 Egg Bowl. It's an incredible moment. And so some of that is kind of going to be removed, right? So you're basically going to have 15 less players, and you say, you know, Steve, those guys weren't going to play anyway. There's some truth to that. But how many of those guys maybe would go walk on, have a chance to play, transfer out, go somewhere else, and have play an opportunity elsewhere because they had a little SEC practice experience under their belt? That understood, we've opened it up, and now 105 scholarships are available. Now, these are not all going to be full scholarships. And what I mean by that is there may be some guys that, you know, you're not mandated to spend the whole 105. You may have a situation where you got a recruitable walk-on type guy, and you pay him books. Or maybe you give him a partial scholarship. You know, and so that's something that I don't think has been reported. People think, man, we got to find a way to make up the money for 20 more scholarships. And maybe we do. Maybe that's what we do. Maybe we fully fund the whole 105. And maybe that's something that evolves over a few years. And, you know, one of the things I think where it maybe will benefit Mississippi State, I don't think this is a great thing for State on National Signing Day with high school recruits because of the fact, you know, there have been times in the past, you know, they may fill up, an opponent may fill up at a certain position, right? Now, you, as a coach and a recruiter, you can always argue, it's like, hey, we have one running back committed, they've got two, right? And so you're going to be the third back in the class, and if they really wanted you, they would have already gotten you, right? They would have already made an offer to you. So you're going to have to recruit against that. So there will be, you know, a recalibration of sorts in many respects. But I think because of the fact the portal kind of is what it is, I think you have the opportunity now when perhaps in the past you were up against the 85. Like right now, State has 85. You know, we took a junior college defensive lineman in June. That got us to 85. And so I think what happens is when you begin to think in those terms, it's like, you know, hey, maybe I don't have to be quite so selective. Now, you don't ever want to put guys on your roster that can't play. But maybe in the portal, especially when you need an edge rusher, and you got some guys out there that want to come, and maybe you're a little bit worried, you know, you can say, you know what, hey, I've got a couple of extra grants I can work with. Maybe I can afford to take a chance on this kid. And maybe he works out, maybe he doesn't. I'd rather have half a loaf than no bread at all, though. And so maybe that's a dynamic that I think maybe helps Mississippi State. Because, you know, hey, we've got to embrace the portal. I think Jeff Lebby understands that. He's proven that. The time that he's been here, that he understands how to utilize the portal And so now you got maybe a few more scholarships to work with in the portal. I don't think it's going to be a great thing for us on the high school side, especially when we're recruiting against Alabama and LSU and people like that. I just don't. Now, the in-state stuff, guys, you know, there's all the people say, well, NIL, guys, there always was NIL. It just wasn't legal, especially within this state, right? And that, everybody needs to understand that. And nobody's immune from that. Don't be a Pollyanna about it either. Everybody understands that everybody's broken the rules at some point. And so don't think there's still not some dark money out there, which is so incredibly foolish. It's so egocentric. Like, well, look what I did. You know, I got this kid for us. You know, you could do it through NIL and not put the university in harm's way. But that's something to consider too. Now, that's going to be something I think we have to deal with. On the high school side, I think you're going to have some schools, because of the fact they're not up against the 85, and maybe there's some Bear Bryant scholarships out there. It's like, well, hey, we'll take the last five guys, best available athletes, regardless of position, and kind of stack the roster a little bit. I'm sure Bear Bryant, the ghost of Bear Bryant, is probably exceptionally pleased, because we, in many respects, have kind of reverted back to what it was before scholarship limitations. You know, used to, they could just write as many scholarships as they wanted. People like Bear Bryant, they did their best, especially against State and Ole Miss. We'll just go sign those kids from Mississippi, whether they play or not. We'll go out and sign the best 6, 7, 8 quarterbacks a year. We'll make linebackers out of them. We'll make running backs out of them, safeties. But more importantly, we keep them away from our competition because we've got the biggest bankroll. That's an aspect of this that I think you have now brought that back to the forefront of high school football recruiting. And again, I don't think that's a great thing for Mississippi State. Now, I do think the portal...
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money
at works in our favor. Now, baseball, because there's not much change in basketball, but there is a little bit of give and take on this baseball thing. So the roster limits have been 40, which I thought was a good thing, 40. And a lot of those guys were not full scholarship guys, as you guys know, as my dog continues to reposition. Will you sit down somewhere? And so you got the 40 is going to be reduced to 34. Now, the flip side of that is now you're able to give athletic aid to all 34. Now, the good thing is that, again, many of these players that on the equivalency side get some athletic and academic money. So, theoretically, we could fund 34 scholarships. We could. But I don't think we will. I don't think we have to. And I don't think it's a situation where a lot of people are going to have to pay to play. I think what's going to happen here is you may end up, you're 11.7 now. And so, what if you end up spending about 20? You end up funding about 20 scholarships because you can make up the shortfall between their academic scholarship money with some athletic aid. And so that way you've got more guys that are going to graduate and not graduate into debt. Right. And so I don't think you need the full 34. So, yes, theoretically, yes, if you wanted to do that, you could. But I think because of the fact you can stack aid in sports like that, you're going to be able to maybe give 34 guys some financial aid, but not have to pay 34 athletic scholarships. Now, the interesting part about this is nobody seems to know for sure when this is going to go into place. The current expectation is all of this will kind of be settled and voted upon in April. That's a long time from now. And so when it's voted on then it goes into effect for the next academic athletic year, which is 2025. So your Mississippi State baseball team for 2025 is not impacted by that. Now this time next year, Chris Simonis is going to have to make some interesting decisions. As soon as the season ends, you got to really sit down and be honest with yourselves and say, okay, what do we need in the portal? What do we need to do to make some room in the portal? What do we need to do for some of these guys that maybe we signed and hadn't panned out? Is it fair to keep them? Should we encourage them to transfer, perhaps go to junior college? It's going to be a very complicated process, and it already is a very busy time of year for baseball coaches. Roster management for baseball right now is probably trickier than any other sport in college. I'm sure you could probably throw softball in there too, but there's just not quite as many players capable of playing at this level vying for those positions. Baseball's a different dynamic. It is. There's a ton of baseball players. You're a baseball player. I'm a baseball player. Or we were. Our kids are baseball players. You know, there's a lot more. You know, there's a lot of young ladies out there that are in dance competitions. There's a lot of ladies out there that are involved in gymnastics. And so the talent is kind of diluted in different directions in that respect. But, you know, I'm sure Samantha Ricketts is having to make some of the same decisions that Chris Lemonis is, just not on the same scale. And so I'm in no way being disrespectful to softball. It's just that there's a greater talent pool to pull from. And so a lot of people competing for those spots, and there's always an opportunity to kind of upgrade, you know, upgrade your roster. And that's the real challenge for every coach in every sport. You know, it's a difficult business, and it grows more difficult by the day. Because there's a lot of people out there now, it's like, well, hey, this is what they're offering me. What can you offer? You know, it's not as simple as like when you have the full scholarship sports, you can sit down and say, hey, here's the deal. Here's your stipend. Maybe you tack on a little NIL money, but it's a different dynamic with these former equivalency sports. So there will be, I don't know, some changes, I guess, in the way that people do things. And we don't even know yet the full list of unintended consequences. Trust me, 2-3 years into this thing, we're gonna do some things we're not gonna like about it. Maybe we don't have the same freedoms that we once did. I think more financial aid for athletes is always a good thing, but you know who foots the bill for that, right? It's the university, which in turn is us. You know, and I think in many respects too, these facility wars, in many respects, are over. I think you do some renovation to keep things fresh, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of brand new stadiums built for a while. Things are changing. And maybe that's a great thing. That was one of the things you asked yourself years ago. Did Alabama football really need a water element in the lobby? What's up? We're first class. Do you really need that, though? I mean, do you think high school kids are going to walk in there and be blown away because, you know, you got a dolphin eye sculpture or something at dinner? Those are the kind of things that I think they're really silly. I think when you look back in hindsight, it's like, you know, this was probably not a good investment. And so now it's about player comfort. It's about what you can do for players. And now with this new legislation that will soon be accepted. Well, I say soon. We're talking early next year. The House settlement will come out, and then things will kind of trickle down. But it's incredible to me how all of this has come up. And the thing that I ask myself is, you know, where does it end? Because now the precedent has been established. You know, for years and years and years and years and years, like even on the cover of your programs, you had player images. And you put those programs up for retail, right? You sold them out front. And so how many times did you buy or keep a program that had a picture of your favorite player on it? Now, for a long time, you didn't have any of that, right? You didn't have a player image, but sometimes you did. And how many years does that go back? I mean, it's like, not to mention, you know, what if it expands beyond that? What if you were a cheerleader or a picture of the famous Maroon Band, and they took your image and then they put it on the front of a magazine, and then they sold that thing for $3 or $4 a pop, and you didn't get any money? You know, how many of your relatives bought that and hung on to it as a keepsake? And those are the things that I ask myself. So where does it end? You know, where do we cut it off and say, you know what, hey, enough's enough? You know, when do we stop finding people that feel that they were aggrieved? Well, the answer to that question is never. If you don't believe me, just go log on to Facebook or Twitter. Everybody out there has been aggrieved in some respects. You know, it used to be an honor to be involved with stuff, and nowadays it's like, hey, I want some money. And maybe that's fair. You know, if you're using my image to further your retail enterprise, I should probably share in the revenue. It's like I've always said about jerseys. I mean, it's like, how much money did Jeg Mangum and Dak Prescott not get because of the fact that the university or its licensing partners sold their jerseys and they got nothing from it? Probably not fair. I think we can probably, I mean, how many people went and bought a Dak Prescott jersey? You know, because, hey, Dak's a favorite player, I want a Dak jersey, and then Dak didn't get a dime of it. And you couldn't give Dak a donation. You couldn't make a tip to him, right, because it was a violation of his amateurism status. And so I know they're saying, hey, this is the end. I don't believe that it is, because it's just going to take another group of young enterprising or even old enterprising lawyers to say, you know what, hey, you guys have opened up Pandora's box here, and you've taken care of all these modern-day players, but what about my clients? All those years, you guys sold these things, they turned into collectible items, and their value has increased, and, you know, my client's image was used to facilitate the marketing of your university, and then they got nothing from it. You used my client's image to sell season tickets. You ran an advertisement on TV. And there's a, you know, video of my client scoring a touchdown for your university. And you use that to raise money for the university or to sell tickets. And so we need to check. It really is that simple. And again, there may be some lawyer that reaches out to me. My lawyers listen to the show, and somebody say, you know what, Steve, you're not right because of this. But I think when the precedent has already been set, that it's just a matter then somebody else will go behind that and choose to exploit that precedent. Just my feelings. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by CloseWithBlair.com. Blair is our friend in the mortgage industry. And if you are looking to purchase a home, refinance your home, look no further than Blair Chandler. Visit him at CloseWithBlair.com. Let me give you his phone number, too, just to make it even easier to track him down. This is his personal cell number, 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. Call or text him directly. I like to keep business in the family when we can. I like doing business with Blair. Blair's been my friend a long time. I trust Blair. I don't do deals with advertisers that I don't think operate in an ethical manner. And so when I give you my endorsement of Blair Chandler, I am being your friend here. Whether you're looking for your first home or a game day condo, or perhaps life has dealt you a curveball, you're looking for a life reset, let Blair take a little stress out of your life. Let him handle your mortgage needs. And again, there's just so many options out there for you. But rather than you go, you know, try to get lucky, deal with a proven winner, 23 years of experience in the industry. Nobody does a better job. Thus, CloseWithBlair.com. He'll be your advocate with underwriting. He'll get you to the closing table when perhaps others can't. Again, that's CloseWithBlair.com. Okay. From time to time, I ride around town and listen to some NWA and some Tupac and things of that nature. And I got hemmed up yesterday thinking about some diss tracks. And so I reached out to my kids, too, that they are partakers of the rap genre more so than I am. But nevertheless, I thought, you know what, hey, let me put a list of the best diss tracks that I know and allow my kids to kind of fill in with some more modern stuff. There have been some legendary beefs over the years. There was Ice-T versus Everybody, LL Cool J, Cool Moe Dee, NWA, of course, at Ice Cube and Eazy-E. There's just a lot of that, and so we're going to work some of that in. And so top 10 diss tracks, according to me. You may know more about these beefs than I do. And so I just share that with you because of the fact that's my disclaimer. This is not in my wheelhouse, but I thought, you know what, hey, let's talk about it. All right, number 10, a rapper you may not be quite as familiar with. We've had his music on the show before. And this, I don't know specifically who this song was directed to. I think it's more of a group of people rather than just maybe one other rapper. But it's our boy Ritz, and we're going to go with L-A-F. He's pronounced it as laugh, but it's lame as you know what. I love it. And the remix is only available on YouTube. I wish it was available on Spotify with Yellow Wolf doing the first verse. Absolutely love it, man. I love Yellow Wolf. Had a chance to meet Yellow Wolf. Told me I was the illest dad he'd ever seen. It's in my Twitter bio. But met him in Rocklahoma. Thanks, Mark. And he could not have been nicer. There are a lot of people out there that have achieved something in life, and sometimes they think they're too good to talk to us. It wasn't the case with Yellow Wolf. I haven't seen Ritz perform in person. I like the Ritz catalog. I like to see him get some notoriety. And so when we can maybe introduce you to somebody else, we want to do that here on the show. So Ritz is laugh number 10. Number 9, going back. You know, LL Cool J and Cool Moe Dee had a legendary beef. And a lot of it was because LL Cool J was young and very unabashed in his delivery and immediately found some success, especially with radio. Can't live without a radio. And that was life in those days. And back, you know, everybody had a boombox. You carried them on your shoulder. You rode on a bicycle. You tied it to the back. And people rode around listening to cassettes. But LL Cool J, again, very unabashed in his delivery. And basically said, hey, you know, I'm making more money than your pops, and I'm just 18. And for some reason, that resonated with Cool Moe Dee in a negative way. And so he comes back with, how you like me now? Well, I like you just fine, Cool Moe Dee. Thought it was great. Some great tracks from him, too, to Wild Wild West. But after that, LL Cool J came out with this incredible track, really unlike anything else in his catalog, but Jack the Ripper. That's your number 9 track as he kind of tries to take Cool Moe Dee apart. Number 8, a little more modern track. And I pulled this one out because I remember when it came out, my oldest son, Ani, loved it. Mia, my youngest daughter, loved it. I think all of the Robertson children loved it. It's the Drake Meek Mill beef. And to be fair, it really wasn't a fair fight. Maybe you see it differently. I know Drake is kind of a polarizing figure for some, but his talent is undeniable. But he had a great track called Back to Back. My favorite line in there, of course, Meek Mill, I believe was dating Cardi B at the time. I think that's correct. And she was taking him out on tour. And Drake just said, hey, you know, is this your world tour or your girl's tour? Yeah, because those trigger fingers turn into Twitter fingers. A lot of that in the world, too. A lot of keyboard cowboys, a lot of social media gangsters out there. But I dig it. And I think Drake's very, very, very talented. Number 7, I was a Jay-Z fan from the beginning. I mean, like the very first time that I heard Jay-Z, I was like, this guy's got something special. His lyrical ability is, I think, in many respects, unparalleled. He and Eminem, of course, I think both kind of different level than a lot of other people. But Jay-Z's delivery, I think, is iconic. And, of course, he and Nas had a lot of back and forth. I know Nas had Ether. That was a big thing. That got some mention in the family chat today. But I'm going to go because I'm on the Jay-Z side of the beef. I'm going with the Takeover, which Ether was a response to that. And I think rap beefs are healthy. I do. And I think listening to this kind of stuff, too, when you think about your own enemies, I think it's kind of cathartic. I think it's healthy. A lot of people say, well, garbage in, garbage out. I think sometimes when you have negative emotions about another person and somebody else can articulate exactly what you're feeling, it allows you to get that out of your system. Maybe you sing along, you listen to it, you crank it up. It does for me, you know. Maybe it does for you. All right, number 6. Kendrick Lamar, of course, has had a beef with a lot of people. This is a Mia Robertson selection, who will soon be taking the LSAT for a second time. She had an incredible score the first time, but did not make her goal. And she feels like she needs to hit her goal to be a shoe-in for an Ivy League school. So she's retaking it. So please wish her the best. She's phenomenal. She is a brilliant young lady, and she has exceeded every expectation that I've ever had for her. She graduated from Mississippi State, summa cum laude, never made anything less than 100 in a college course, got a degree in political science with a minor in philosophy, and now she's going to go out and be an attorney and attempt to save the world, and she just might do it. You know, we've never had a Mississippi State governor. She may be the one, to be quite honest with you. But a great, great, great track. And again, she mentioned it, and her older brother kind of co-signed on this, but it's not like us. From Kendrick Lamar, number six, Not Like Us. Number five, probably the king of the diss track right now. And there's some new stuff that has come out in recent weeks from Eminem. We almost did nail in the coffin here, but instead we're going to go with Killshot. And Eminem is one of those people, too, when he gets on the mic and he begins to kind of chew you up, it's probably best that you don't respond. And it's like, I see these reels out there, like where the game is being negative about Eminem. And it's almost like RC Cola talking about Coke, right? I mean, that's how it feels to me. It's like the game is like put this beef together and he's just kind of level jumping. And maybe you enjoy that music. I just don't think he's nearly as talented as the rest of the people on our list today. And again, he's got a following, he's got a fan. But I think this is a guy that has kind of created this beef. It's kind of like Ole Miss calling LSU their real rival, right? That's how it feels to me. But I would not want Marshall Mathers to chew me up on a track because it all of a sudden that becomes part of social culture and that becomes who you are. It becomes your identity. He absolutely will destroy you. But Killshot, number five. All right, number four. Ja Rule is another guy, too. I mean, of course, he was part of that that great music festival that they gave you like a piece of bologna and a sandwich. It was like a piece of bread and a piece of bologna and like, you know, a Little Debbie cake and called it a gourmet meal or whatever. I can't remember the name of that music festival where everybody flew down there and it was the whole thing was a ripoff and Ja Rule was a part of that. And I never was a big Ja Rule fan. I know some of you were and are, and that is perfectly your right to do so. I don't think he's very talented at all. But I tell you, when 50 Cent decides that he wants to get Ja Rule, he does. And it's like the whole thing about when he bought out like the first few rows of his concert. You talk about a flex. It's incredible. But Back Down is a track that's written with Ja Rule in mind. And, of course, some of that, too, is, you know, Ja Rule is taking some shots at Eminem. And it's just like, you know what? Listen, Ja, it's over. Okay? It's over. It's over. Somebody be his friend, tweet him and say, listen, you had a good run with limited talent, but when 50 Cent and Eminem are your marks, you're going to fall short. And I remember when the club came out, like I had not seen anything really like what we saw with 50 Cent. Of course, he's, you know, an Eminem, Marshall Mathers, Dr. Dre family type deal. Absolutely crazy. Like people went ballistic when this album came out. And it's like, hey, we've been waiting for this. And, of course, 50 has shown to be a very astute businessman. And he will tell you really quickly that Marshall Mathers and Eminem and Dr. Dre kind of brought him along with them. But he's his own man now. Absolutely phenomenal talent. Number three, and these last three, I think, are absolutely iconic, which is why they're the top three. I was on the NWA Eazy-E bandwagon before many in our neck of the woods. Loved Eazy-E, God rest his soul. And I love Straight Outta Compton, the movie. I've probably seen it, I don't know, 25, 30 times. Love it, man. Anytime that it's around and I got a couple of hours to kill, I watch it. I love it. But these are going to kind of be out of order here. But Eazy-E came out, put this... this track out is called the Real MFN G's. And so it's a family show, so we're going to be careful with that. But, you know, there's a lyric in there that's pretty interesting, you know, because, you know, when Jimmy Iovine and Interscope and those guys bought the rights to Ice Cube's contract, they had to pay Eazy-E. And so Eazy-E came out with, hey, Dre Day's Eazy-E's payday, or Eazy's payday. It's true. And so, there's some reels out there, some old interviews when, you know, Easy's like, hey, every time they can diss me all they want, but when they do, they got to pay me. Business can be funny, man. Number two, probably some people, especially West Coast people would say this is probably the best diss track. It's number two for me. But shortly, it's after Ice Cube left NWA. They recount this in the film, but it's No Vaseline. And it is one of those songs that it kind of stands on its own. But Ice Cube, a legendary MC, that's what we used to call him back in the day, you know. But incredible, incredible, incredible. Number one, though. And I don't think there could be a different number one. I have seen some other lists. In my research for this list, I looked out and some other people had this, you know, six or seven. And I think this because there's some recency bias. It's like, hey, well, Eminem did this and Drake did this. So it's got to be better than Tupac. But really not much at all is better than Tupac. I go back to the beginning that when I was in the music industry. I remember when Tupac, of course, left Digital Underground. And a friend of mine said, hey, here's this new rapper coming up. And it was just a mixtape back then. It wasn't even a record deal. And it was Tupac. And it was before Tupac was really anybody. He was a background dancer with Digital Underground. It's insanity. And now you look back, he's one of the greatest rappers of all time. And I remember listening to that, you know, when Get the Gat came out, like Tupac had something kind of similar, you know. But I don't know if there has ever been a more unabashed diss track in the history of music than Hit 'Em Up from Tupac with Outlaws. It's like Tupac basically wrote a couple of rhymes and then got on the mic and just started just dropping bombs. Aimed at Biggie Small and the whole crew, you know, Bad Boy and everything. He absolutely did not care what people thought about him. And all this East Coast and West Coast stuff, he lived it, you know. And Tupac was the real deal. And he was extremely intelligent. You know, we talked about Thug Life and things of that nature. It's a lot more deeper concept than that. But if you go back and you begin to kind of see who Tupac was as a person, despite his very humble beginnings, he was an extremely intelligent man. And again, God rest his soul, you know, lived a violent life, died a violent life. But to suggest that Tupac Shakur was just some flash in the pan is just incredibly wrong. That guy was extremely intelligent. He cared about people. He had some anger issues, for sure, but he cared about his community. That's one of the reasons that he was and remains embraced by his community, because he never truly forgot where he came from. He may be on a video wearing a Versace suit back in the day, but he was still a guy that frequented where he came from and did his best to help other people. Again, a flawed man in every aspect, and many of us are, especially when you begin to think about the level of acclaim that he got. And the money that was available to him, he wasn't always the best citizen, but he was a man that had a vision. And I go back sometimes and listen to the track Changes, and I think about where we were as a society back then, and where we've come from since then. But his heart was in those lyrics, and it has always resonated with me from the beginning. Tupac just seemed to be cut from a different cloth. And there was an authenticity with him and his music and his performance. And again, taken from us too soon, for sure. He and Biggie Smalls both. I wasn't a Biggie fan because I rode with the West Side and Tupac, you know, really wasn't big on this East Coast stuff. I'm just kind of saying it for what it is because I came up with, you know, with NWA and I do like the Public Enemy stuff. But I've always felt that Tupac, to me, Tupac is the greatest rapper of all time. Maybe you disagree, and that's okay. But I think Tupac, and you go back and listen to Apocalypse Now, there's just not any skips on it. And again, you know, it's just like, you know, going back and listening to Dear Mama and that kind of stuff. I mean, you get to see the duality of man listening to a Tupac album. And I think it goes to show you there's just a lot more to him. And it was also real. It wasn't one of these situations where like, hey, we need to write a softer song or we need to have a softer side. I think Tupac did exactly what he wanted to do. I don't think anybody ever told Tupac, hey, this is what you have to do. I think he was so incredibly talented. And, I mean, you think about so many songs from the early 2000s and the late 90s, from this genre where Tupac was a part of it. I mean, you know, the California Love, you know, Dr. Dre. I mean, it's a phenomenal song. And you put it on right now and it still holds up. And I think a lot of it's Tupac. And of course, you know, Dr. Dre, phenomenal in every aspect. And again, a very intelligent man that's done really well with his businesses and his money. I have a lot of respect for the old school guys that have kind of carried this genre when it was still kind of considered kind of an outlaw genre. But to me, Tupac is a king and he always will be. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. And I tell you this, if I ever win the lottery, I'm coining them out. It's true. I'm going to buy gifts for everybody I love, including you, because they have the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise. A lot of people kind of make that claim, and it's just kind of a marketing ploy, but it's also untrue. And I like to buy Bulldog merch from Bulldogs because they know what it should look like and know what I'm probably going to buy, right? They know what Bulldogs want. So the best place for Bulldogs to go to get Bulldog merch is Campus Bookmart. Now, go buy and see their smiling faces. Get outfitted for the fall. Right, go ahead and get some new gear. Go beat the rush, guys. You got a month, okay? Football season has kind of snuck up on you. It has, so don't delay. Go ahead and make that online order today at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, I'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. Gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. You need some new things for the tailgate. You need some new things for the fan cave. You've been putting it off. You've been down to the Redneck Riviera, and you probably spent too much money down there. Now it's time to get back to business, okay? It's time to get some new Mississippi State merch, whether it be for your wardrobe, your pet, your office. And, guys, there's so many Bulldogs in your family anyway, whether it be a bridal gift or a housewarming gift. They've got exactly what you need at Campus Bookmart. Be sure and check them out today. All right. We need to take some time now. And we're going to do another opponent preview. Now, we touched on this about a month or so ago. You know, Texas and Oklahoma, what we expect from them. We welcome them to the league. And some people are like, well, Steve, I'm not so welcoming. I get it. I think it's weird, too. I really do. But Texas last year went 12-2. Really good team. You kind of run through the numbers here. They blew out Rice. They beat Alabama 34-24 in Tuscaloosa. So people said, you know what? These guys are for real. They nearly got him in Austin the year before. But you knew that Sark and those guys were like, you know what, hey, we can get this thing done. They bounced back the next week at home. I say bounced back, but they returned home the next week and beat Wyoming like a drum, 31-10. They go to Baylor, win 38-6, and then get Kansas, who was nationally ranked at 24th in both polls at the time, at 24, and they get them 40-14. So you open up the year on a five-game winning streak, and you feel really good heading into the Red River rivalry in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl, and you lose 34-30 against an Oklahoma team that was just kind of pretty good. They weren't great. They weren't elite. And it's one I'm sure that Texas wishes they had back. The next week, they go to Houston and get those guys 31-24. They get BYU 35-6. I don't know that I would ever pick BYU to beat Texas. Kansas State gave them a real game there at Texas Memorial Stadium. The Longhorns win at 33-30 in overtime. Many of us watched the closing moments of that game, pulling for the Wildcats. They go to TCU the next week, 29-26 over the Horned Frogs. They get Iowa State 26-16, and they get Texas Tech 57-7 to close out the regular season. And then, you know what? They head to the Big 12 championship game. And the Cowboys of Oklahoma State made it a game for a few minutes. And then Texas wins going away 49-21. And so you look up and you're like, hey, Texas is a legit NAFL championship contender. And what do you know? They play Washington in the Sugar Bowl. And Washington gets them. 37-31. One of only two losses on the year for the Longhorns. And Quinn Ewers, of course, had a huge year. And so Yeah, this is going to be a tall task for Mississippi State. It's the first game on the schedule I look at and say, hey, this is a probable loss. Now, I know that Jeff Lebby, being a former Oklahoma Sooner, will have the guys up and ready to go. This game's going to mean something to him. It truly is. Now, Texas got a handful of games before we make our trip out there. They get Colorado State in week one at home, and then they travel to Michigan. Michigan lost some key parts. They don't have Jim Harbaugh this year. A lot of changes up there. Don't be the least bit surprised if Texas goes up there and comes home with a dub. I know Michigan's a defending national champs. They still have some pieces back from that team that knows how to win. It's not going to be cold. It may be cool. But it's still 11 a.m. game in September, you know, even in Michigan. But it may not be as humid. I won't be surprised at all if Texas wins that game. And you won't either. The next week is Texas San Antonio and then Louisiana Monroe. So you get through the directional schools here of your home state and your border state. And so there's a real chance that Texas is going to be 4-0 when we get there. At worst case, 3-1. And we're not sneaking up on them. And there's no reason to think that the week before against Louisiana Monroe that they're going to get tired. You may see Arch Manning play some in a game against Louisiana Monroe. I'm sure they'd love to play him against us, and hopefully for them the game will dictate that. I don't really want to see him. I think Quinn Ewers is enough. There's an open date the next week, so there's no chance of a trap game here as then they play Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout again. And then it gets interesting. Georgia will make the trip. The defending national champ Georgia Bulldogs will make the trip to Austin. That'll be a fun game to watch. Then they go to Vanderbilt, and let me just tell you this, they're going to be really disappointed. The Texas fans are. They're going to have high school stadiums in Texas better than what they're going to see at Vanderbilt. Then Florida makes the trip to Austin. Then they go to Arkansas, and that's an old game, you know. It's going to be an old game, old Southwest Conference game. But it's Arkansas better be ready, like it was back in the old days when Texas kind of ruled the roost. And then Kentucky, and then at A&M. Again, this schedule is outside of Georgia. There's not a conference game you look at and say, you know what, hey, that may maybe a toss-up. Now, they should win every conference game outside of Georgia. They should. I mean, you talk about a peach of a schedule. They got a gift. You don't get Alabama. You don't get LSU. You get Georgia. You don't get Ole Miss, who should be really good this year. But you start running through the numbers here, and it's like, man, you know, once they get through Georgia, they shouldn't lose a game. And so any ground that they may lose along the way in the first half of the schedule, they should be able to make it up in the second half and make the playoff. There's really no question about it. And this is going to be a really good team. It absolutely is, and it should be. And again, you look, let's skip to some of the minutiae here, but man, they put up 36 points a game last year and allowed 19. That's a winning formula. Put up over 500 points as an offense. Nuts, man. And 4,047 yards passing and then 2,638 rushing. That is a ton of offense. You don't need me to do the math for you. Sark has got the boys rolling. And guys, they ran over 1,000 plays last year. Nuts. 6,685 yards, 59 touchdowns. They allowed 30. So you're nearly doing 2-1 scoring. That's championship level football right there. It's nuts. And again, you get a lot of people back. Now, you get the grind of an SEC schedule, but again, when you look at the quality of that schedule, I don't know that they're really going to be tested. And of course, that game in College Station would be interesting, just because of the fact it's been forever since those two teams played. And the Aggies will be happy to have him back, and they should be a decent team. And I don't think they're going to be great. I don't think so. Mike Elko is a guy that knows offense. We did some great things at Duke. And you got to think with a more talented cast around him, they should be able to sustain that level of success despite the fact that the degree of difficulty in the Southeastern Conference is much steeper than that is in the Atlantic Coast Conference. But you look at this team, and there's just not a lot you look at and say, you know what, hey, I'm kind of concerned about this. We talk about the passing numbers. You know, Quinn Ewers last year, these are ridiculous numbers. 272 completions, 394 attempts. Threw 22 touchdowns against just 6 interceptions. Completion percentage of just over 69%. Nice. 3,479 yards, averaging right at 290 a game. Malik Murphy was the primary backup. Arch Manning played in 2 games, completed 2 passes and 5 attempts. And listen, these people, it's so interesting. People are like, oh, he's a bust. No, he's not. He hasn't had his day yet. I know people automatically want to hate him because of the fact he had all this hype. He was the number one quarterback in the country. And be like, hey, if he had come to my program, he'd be starting. Well, your program doesn't have Quinn Ewers, who was probably a top 10 pick in the draft, as your starting quarterback. And give the Manning some credit. Being willing to kind of sit and wait his turn. And you know they did their due diligence before they even got there. But Ewers is legit. Look at the rushing numbers here. Again, they kind of did it by committee, but they had a primary rusher of Jonathan Brooks. Played 11 games last year, 1,139 yards, just a sophomore. Averaged over 100 yards, 103.55 yards. Xavier Worthy was the leading receiver last year, caught 75 balls for over 1,000. You got that, so think about that for a second. 1,000-yard rusher, 1,000-yard receiver. I'm telling you, it's going to be a tough, tall task for us, for sure. We're going to have to bring our A game. But, yeah, this is one you take the bias out of it. And, of course, by the time we kick off, I'll have convinced myself we have a chance, right? But this Texas team is built to make a run at an NFL championship. Are they good enough to pull it off? Don't know. But they certainly got enough pieces in place that you begin to kind of realize that, hey, these guys have to be taken for real. Granted, they don't get the benefit of playing in the Big 12 anymore, but they kind of got a Big 12 quality schedule within our league. I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is. And if I'm Oklahoma, I'm pretty upset. You know, like, hey, we came in here together and you're treating them like Big Brother again. It's nuts. But the closer we get to the season and the more we begin to kind of let things come into focus, and again, you know, we got a long way to go, almost 2 months before we play these guys. You never know what's going to happen. But you don't look at this and see a lot of issues, right? I mean, you don't see a glaring weakness. And there's a reason. They won 12 games last year. It's no joke. It's not luck. And, of course, you know, Sark was the guy that was in contention for our job. We hired Mike Leach. For the 2024 recruiting cycle, Texas had just 11 transfers in. It's pretty crazy, isn't it? I mean, and again, I think it speaks to the strength of their roster. It's like, hey, we have a lot in place, and so we don't need a ton of transfers. But what's crazy about this is just about all their transfers. I say just about. More than half are 4- and 5-star guys. They added Javion Cole, a cornerback from San Jose State, and you get Jermaine Lowell from Louisville. Bill Norton, remember him? We played against him last year. That guy's a massive defensive lineman. We wrote about him previewing the Arizona game. Doesn't have great mobility, but he's a guy that can just kind of eat up space there in the middle and let the linebackers clean up. I think that he's going to have a big year. Tiaola Savea, I hope I got that right, also making the move over from Arizona. So it's like Arizona finally builds a nice defensive front. They all get in the portal and go to Texas. Amarina Black from Alabama comes over. Isaiah Bond from Alabama comes over. Kendrick Blackshire from Alabama comes over. Obviously, those guys had connections with Sark. Silas Bolden makes the move from Oregon State. Silas Bolden, of course, a guy at Mississippi State. Kind of got involved with earlier. He lands at Texas. Very talented wide receiver. Matthew Golden makes a move from Houston, their wide receiver. I don't even show Silas Bolden being enrolled, but yeah, maybe somebody hadn't kept up with this. Trey Moore comes in from UTSA, and then Andrew Mukaba from Clemson comes in. 25 outgoing transfers, and so we'll see how things kind of shake loose there. But again, I think when you think about what they have coming back, what they have coming in, I don't think anybody's expecting them, to miss a beat. Yeah, Malik Murphy, the primary quarterback, left and went to Duke. And listen, do you blame him? You're playing behind Quinn Ewers and then Archie Manning's grandson's waiting in the wings. It may not be the best situation for you, so he gets out and go. And then, you know what? That's what the portal is for. Kind of gives you a chance to kind of reset the career. But, we're going to have an issue with Texas. And, of course, that series has, not been played very often. We haven't played them that often in football. We played them a lot in baseball. But we'll revisit this as we get a little bit closer to game week. But, I like what they've done. And I remember all the jokes, Texas, is Texas back? No, Texas is not back. Guys, Texas is back. They are. And with this expanded playoff, you could expect them to play a lot of football games this year. I think everybody sees it for what it is. And again, I think this is a team. I think this team's capable of reaching the SEC championship game. I don't know how many people are projecting that right now, but they're certainly capable of doing so. I think that is a fair estimation. And I'm sure that's what everybody in Austin, Texas is telling themselves. Hey, we got a chance to go win an SEC championship. We got a chance to go win an AFL championship. And wouldn't it be great to have those expectations here? We're just not quite there yet. But it's one of those scenarios you begin to think about, hey, if you're a Texas fan, this is one of those years you've been waiting for. And the fact that you've got such a lackadaisical conference schedule, you talk about, it may take us a year or two to acclimate to the SEC. I don't think so. I think it's pretty safe to say these guys are going to be double-digit wins without any issues whatsoever. All right, final segment of the show. Brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Guys, if you're bringing a large group to town, and you probably should, because time spent together is time well spent, and you can do it in an incredible venue, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will come up. You can go peruse the pictures and see all the amenities that are available to you and your guest. That great full-service kitchen, the wet bar, that incredible back porch area, the fire pit, just kind of nestled away, 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You got one neighbor out there. I want you to be respectful, but it's just really to kind of illustrate how peaceful it is out there. It's the old renovated clubhouse of the old country club. It's a great place. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, and you're going to like what you see. You can check it out yourself. Whether it's a couples weekend, a family weekend, a ballgame weekend, or maybe just a chance to bring in a work crew, in the midweek, rather than go get 5 hotel rooms and wonder where Bob wandered off to, everybody be under one roof. You can break bread together and then retreat to your quarters in the evening for some rest and relaxation. It's wonderful. So think about that when you're bringing a work crew up here. Don't just think it's just for the weekends. It's open 365 days a year. It's true. Now, when you Google, you're also going to have some booking options. Airbnb is going to pop up. VRBO is going to pop up, and you know what? If you want to go that route, you certainly can. But if you want to save some money, I can help you. Book through the Evolve website and save 10% off your stay. Your promo code by being a Boneyard listener is BSR10. That's BSR10. Get you 10% off your stay. And I don't know about you, I'm a promo code guy. Anytime I can save some money, save shipping, get a little bit of a discount, get the Ken Folks discount, I'm happy. That's your Ken Folks discount code, BSR10. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. No better place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, so now you want to know what's going on with Dave Mersheim, Travis Smith. The deadline is 5 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. It's August 1st. And, man, I'm ready for August to get here because we play football in August. But also, too, I'm ready for things to start cooling down. I'm eager. I'm hoping for an early fall like all of you guys. But so as we record this show, and I checked before, There's not been a deal done with Dave Merchant or Travis Smith. Now, I'm not going to sit here and try to give you any false hope, because both of these teams are trying very diligently to sign Dave Merchant and Travis Smith. It's not a situation where we're just going to wait for the clock to run out and then these guys are going to come to school. I don't know at this point I can say I've got a lot of confidence either way with these guys coming to school. And, of course, now Dave Merchant, it's kind of a weird deal, right? If Ryan Prager from A&M had signed, I don't think they would have had any money above the $150,000 threshold to offer him. Well, lo and behold, he goes back to school, and yes, they lose that slot value, but it frees up about $300,000. And that can be offered on top of the $150,000. So he wouldn't be signing for $150,000. He's probably signing for closer to $400,000. And if you're David Merchant, that's one thing you've got to consider. If I go back to school next year, how much more does this offer me? Now, one of the things, too, talking to some MLB scouts, they tell me, you know, him coming back to school does not delay his advancement in pro baseball. This year, he's probably going to low A, right? And so, if he comes back to school, he's probably a high A guy or potentially a double A guy within a year or two. And so, his pathway to the pros is not impeded by coming back. That said, and Dave Merchant, I think, began this year hoping to sign. He was a draft-eligible sophomore, and I think, hey, that's the deal. Now, what you may not know is that David turned down money to come to school in the first place. And so if you're on the family side, it's like, hey, how many times can we say MLB no? And I can tell you, no matter what Dave Merchant chooses, Dave Merchant loves you guys very much. Dave Merchant loves Mississippi State baseball. He loves his teammates. Dave's got to make the best decision for himself. And if that means that it's time for him to begin his pro career, and that's what he and his advisors and family think is best, and that's what he's going to do. But I can tell you, as of now, a deal's not done. Now, tomorrow the news will come at a pretty rapid pace because the deadlines are done and everybody's working diligently to get other guys signed. Now, in Dave Merchant's case, there's nobody left in his draft class. He is their only priority. And that should scare you a little bit, right? Now, the bonus pool is the bonus pool. But they're not having to kind of split time recruiting and trying to court people into signing. The Milwaukee Brewers are. Now, and Milwaukee, too, also had a situation come up earlier today where they had another guy, day three guy, that had to sign, or that did sign, above slot. And that's a good development, too. But it's not enough money that I think you look at and say, well, there goes all the money for Travis Smith. That's just not the case. Still scenario there. Now, we went out and targeted him, really, and here it is. It's Joey Broughton, signed with the Brewers for $535,000. He was a 13th rounder, so $385,000 of that counts against the pool, according to Jim Callis of MLB. He was a high school left-handed pitcher, was committed to Pitt. And so, yeah, that helps a little bit. But, you know, if they offer Travis Smith a comparable deal, if they're able to get him about $500,000 or somewhere close to that, I think he's going to sign. And so you could be sitting in a situation here today where Dave Merchant doesn't come back and Travis Smith doesn't come in. Now, there, if that scenario unfolds, and it may, it also may not. I just think the chances of both of those guys coming is probably not realistic. I think you may be able to get one of them, and you may lose them both. It's not going to derail the program, but we're a better ball club, obviously, with David Merchant, and I think you also would be a better club with Travis Smith. You didn't go out and recruit him because you thought he wasn't any good. Now, part of that is Travis Smith. You go out and sign him basically as an insurance policy with PICO. Because kind of unbeknownst to many of you, PICO Cohn turned down multiple deals on day three in the draft. And some of those deals were lucrative. PICO wants to come back. PICO has an opportunity to come in here and be the guy for us. And that was the thing that I said all year last year, if you listen to the Due to Fact with me and Ani, I really expected PICO to emerge as the Sunday starter in time, and he did in the postseason. And people forget, I mean, he wasn't even really a full year recovered You know, we found out last year they were going to have the surgery right before the season began, and we took our time with him this year. But, you know, there was a lot of people out there. Pico's a guy that's a left-hander that can spot up the fastball. He can drop a change on you. He's got a really good slider. And if you saw what he did to Didiwick from Virginia, one of the most explosive players in their lineup, and Pico really chewed him up. And so I think Pico made himself some money in a postseason. He just won't collect on it until next year. But we got a lot of arms coming in. And there will be people, obviously, because anytime there's anything that negative happens to Mississippi State, like if Travis Smith elects to sign, there's going to be all this uninformed noise about, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We're going to be piecemealing this thing together. And we got to go bulldoze the stadium, burn Chris Lemonis in effigy, you know. But we talked about beginning of the year with Justin Parker. At the end of the year, excuse me, if there's been anybody that's earned a measure of grace from our fan base, it's Justin Parker. And again, you think about these arms coming in. Many of the guys that are signed are already here. And some more will be here in the next week, 10 days, as we get ready to get ready for fall classes. But, you know, Travis Smith, in many respects, is like, hey, you know, give us another SEC guy that's been through the wars, been in the ballparks. But it was also a scenario, too, is like you kind of felt like, when you committed Travis Smith, that he was a draft risk. And he said as much in the interview that I did with him. But you sign him just in case Pico goes, and then Pico stays. It'd been a devastating thing if you lose Pico and Travis Smith. But again, I think Pico could potentially be your Friday night starter next year. And some people say, but Steve, do you remember how well he pitched for us as a freshman? Pico was not scared. You know, and now all of a sudden, he's back, he's healthy, he's got a pitching coach that is able to kind of bring the best out of him. And when I shared with somebody just yesterday, you know, Pico's a little bit of a jerk on the mounds. It's true. Like, you guys see him, he's so quiet. And so, man, he's out there, like, waving his glove, saying, get in the box, let's go. You know, he is a competitor. So the scenario right now is, we don't know for sure. As we get ready for dinner tonight, we don't know for certain what Dave Marchand, Travis Smith are going to do. But I think there very much is a possibility that both of those guys are going to sign a pro deal on Thursday. Now, you need to be prepared for that. And if you end up getting one of them to come back, or Marchand to come back and or Travis Smith to come to school, then that's a win. We've navigated the draft pretty well, but of course, you know, the second half of day three has created a lot of anxiety and trepidation in Mississippi State baseball circles. And you guys share in that same concern. But I'm here to tell you, it's not over with. There's still some portal traffic out there that we're working on. And you think, well, Steve, you know, what's the quality of guys left? There's still some guys, there's still some bats out there that are legit. Yeah, you remember, like the Nolan McCarthy thing. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, if you could have gone and gotten him, of course, he ultimately decided to follow Ammo to Georgia. Now, if you could find a guy like that or comparable to that, makes you a better club. And that's the thing that I think about so much about last year. You know, you lose Dylan Kopp the first week of SEC play. And I believe that the numbers are correct. The last seven games prior to his injury, he hit .295. I believe that's correct. And you know what he can do defensively. This guy's elite. And so you feel like, hey, what if we'd have had that bat down the stretch? You lose Ross Highfield to Tommy John in the fall. You go out and get Joe Powell, and of course, Joe hadn't swung a bat competitively in 18 months. Took him a while to kind of get going. He had a month there where you couldn't even pitch to him. But you start thinking about, hey, if I've got Ross Highfield and Dylan Cubs bats available, I'm a better offensive team. But how many times did we have guys maybe go in a little bit of a funk? And maybe a day off would have helped them, but we just didn't have anybody that we could put in there that gave us a competitive advantage. And so you just kind of got to let them play their way through it. And that's not lose sight of the fact, too, that Hunter Hines is back. And that was something we didn't expect to happen at all. We thought DJ and Hunter were done for sure, and possibly Marchand. You knew Connor Hyzak and many of those guys, all their seniors, you knew they were gone. But, you know, the only real surprise, I guess, is Kim Schulke, you know, kind of getting drafted late. It's not a surprise that he signs. It was just kind of a surprise that he got offered that late. And, of course, you know, deal pretty much done. happy for Cam and his family. They're great people. They are. But we're going to play baseball next year, and we're going to have a good team. And again, what happens is sometimes we become prisoners of the moment. Like if Dave Marchand announces tonight or in the morning that he's coming back, that's going to be great news for Mississippi State. It doesn't mean we're getting to Omaha, but it certainly helps the cause, right? Now, if Dave Marchand comes out tomorrow and announces that he signed, which is a possibility, and it may even be a probability, we're still going to play baseball, and we're still going to play baseball at a high level next year. And one of the things that we hope to do is bring players in them and ultimately see them play well while they're here and become pro prospects and sign a professional deal. You want to talk about what helps recruiting? That helps recruiting. That probably helps recruiting more than anything. As great as the facilities are here, and they are amazing, and the more I travel, the more I appreciate that. So you have the fan support piece, and there have been so many players that have mentioned that, hey, that atmosphere there, like Dane Burns, he goes, man, I have to go play in that atmosphere. I got to go toe the rubber, and I got to shut down LSU with 16,000 Bulldogs at my back. It makes a difference. But Dane Burns is a guy that comes from a professional sports family. Dane understands how the game is played a little bit. He also understands that in 2 years, he can be right back in this situation here. If I go to Mississippi State for 2 years and show that I can get some of the best hitters in the country out, and rather than me being a 17th round pick by the Kansas City Royals, I'm probably a top 10 round pick by somebody else and have really helped myself exponentially. Right? So that's the real story there. And so I thought we'd have an answer from Marchand by close of business Tuesday. We didn't, which maybe gives me a little bit of, you know, a little bit of hope, you know. But my firm belief is that, you know, he did not know what they were going to be able to offer him until the Ryan Prager situation happened. If Prager had signed, there's not much money left to work with. And I think our fans have become incredible fans of the California Angels draft, because you want Marchand back. I do too. But I also have enough faith in our staff and our ability to recruit and the portal class we put together and the players we have coming back that, yeah, we're going to be fine. Now, what you miss, though, is, you know, Dave Marchand is the base runner. You know, Dave Marchand is the bunter. Dave Marchand is the guy out there that gives the pitcher something else to worry about when he's at first base. You know, how many times last year did Dakota Jordan get a pitch to hit because Dave Marchand's over there just being, you know, the water bug over there, giving them something else to consider. And so instead of just rocking and firing home, they had to deal with him. And then how many times did he go steal the base and Dakota Jordan drive him in? You know, so that's an element too. How do you replicate that, you know, if he doesn't come back? So the good news is all of this leaves as topics of conversation by close of business on Thursday. 5 p.m. Eastern, it's all over with. And either Travis Smith, Dave Marchand will sign or they won't. And, you know, we've done our best to cover it and keep you guys apprised of kind of how the thing all fits together. And I've been so incredibly proud of you guys, I'll be honest with you. There'll be times that I'll say things on the Boneyard trying to explain how the draft process works. And then I'll get in these Facebook groups or I get on the message board and I see that same information being shared. You know, educate other people. It's not about being a know-it-all. It's about give our fans some assurances, okay, this is how this thing works, right? This is how the slot value impacts the bonus pool when a guy doesn't sign. This is how much money. I just read the other day, blew my mind. I was looking up Michael Ross, remember him, from Samford, a guy that we brought in and visited, and he went 13-0 last year at Samford and transferred, was committed to transfer to Florida. And he got drafted late, and he signed for $150,000. That could have been us. It absolutely could have been us. And what's incredible about that, too, is like I remember when the rumors were getting out that he was going to sign, some Florida folks suggested that he was getting over $1 million. It's nowhere close. It's about 10% of what people said it was going to be. $150,000. Can you imagine that? You go out and you get Samford's ace, and you think, hey, this is a guy that will come in here, be a difference maker for us, and then he leaves for $150,000. You know, we're not going to be in that scenario either. You know, we're not going to have somebody sign for $150,000, especially a guy like that we were counting on. You know, that's there's just so much of that. And like Conrad Kaysen, you know, just signed for over $1 million with the Red Sox. And that guy was taken very, very late, you know, on day two. And people are like, oh, he's going to sign for $250,000. I think the final number was $1.2 million. Of course, Dakota Jordan now signs for $2 million. And so these guys are not accepting a minor amount of money. And that's the thing. Some people are like, well, I don't understand why Michael Ross wouldn't bet on himself and come back. Well, he'd have been a senior. You know, so you got to use what leverage you have. And some guys, again, are just kind of ready to turn pro. But, again, it's not over. It will be – this segment of it will be over. And so we will have navigated the draft. We will have navigated the portal. It's the outgoing portal has been over with for 29 days now. So you don't have guys that can go get in the portal. But and then now we've gotten through – tomorrow will be the signing deadline for MLB clubs for their draftees. Of course, they can continue to sign free agents if they need to. And there may be some guys out there in the portal that ultimately sign a free agent deal. Hopefully none of ours, but you understand my point. You know, it really never ends until they get here, until they enroll in classes. You know, it's just, you know, some people make a declaration like Dane Burns did, and you know, it kind of ends the process. But, you know, it's one of those crazy scenarios where, you know, we're almost at the end of this, and then, you know, maybe there's a portal guy or two, maybe, after this. And then we can kind of close the book on this and get ready for fall ball. Now, in that respect, too, I'm told fall ball is going to be a little bit later than it was last year. Got to get through the Hardy concert, you know, before we get Phil back in shape. And then we'll do some fall ball. But it's going to be a little bit later, so it'll be a little bit cooler. And hopefully you guys can kind of turn out and kind of get to know the new Diamond Dogs and welcome back the older Diamond Dogs. But, yeah, guys, I'm excited about what we've done this summer, and certainly we'd like Dave Marchand back, and we'd love Travis Smith to come to school. But those are not going to be defining factors in our season. Would they impact us in a positive way? You better believe it. But we're not a one- or two-man team. We got a great roster counting the portal guys, and I think this new incoming signing class has some very special pitchers in it. And, again, I've talked about Charlie Foster a few times. Wait till you see these kids pitch, you know. And, again, high school guys coming in, having to deal with college kids, it's a little different dynamic, right? You know, and you got some of the best hitting coaches in the country breaking down your film, looking for tendencies and looking for where you're maybe tipping a pitch. But I trust Justin Parker, and I think you guys should as well. And I think he has a lot more ingredients to make the meal with heading into 2025. And that's how I see it. You know, we had some football stuff yesterday. We were able to interview all 10 assistant coaches. You can find the videos of those for free over at jeanspage.com with latest videos, feature videos. And they're attached to all of our free content. I guess last time I looked, we had done 7 of the 10 already. We'd already written stories or Q&As and attached a video, and that's for free. And you can currently come subscribe at JeanSpage at 60% off the annual subscription price, part of our promo for kickoff this year. And I'd encourage you to come be a part of that. 60% off the annual subscription rate. And that's also available, too, if you're a monthly looking to upgrade. Right? And then once your trial period's over, some other little bonuses that kind of come your way. But, 60% off the annual subscription price. For many of you that took advantage of that $1 a month deal, this is a chance for you to kind of remain on board with us at a discounted price. For your first year. And so look forward to you coming and being a part of that. Best place to get Mississippi State sports coverage for sure. And we'll be back tomorrow on the field. We should have some practice pictures. I'll be working on that myself. And we'll get Jeff Labby. I've also got another feature interview with another staff member after our media opportunity with Jeff Labby. So we will be able to observe a little bit of practice. I'm eager to see that, kind of see what the team looks like. Get some images for you guys, too, of the newcomers. I know you always love those. But we take it really, really seriously. It's not just a job to us. It's a passion for us. And we're eager to bring you guys the best coverage we possibly can. It's football season, folks. I mean, tomorrow's the day. We'll be in camp, and the next thing you know, we'll get a few weeks of practice under our belt. We'll welcome the Colonels of Eastern Kentucky to Starkville, Mississippi, for our home opener. Hope you guys can attend. We look forward to seeing you back in Starkville. One of the things, too, that's so incredible, too, is like despite what you may think, we love game day weekends. We love it when we don't mind the traffic on game day weekends because we know all the surface streets and kind of how to get around it. But there's nothing more fun about living in Starkville. We get into football and baseball season, and the city kind of grows for a weekend. We love when you guys come for basketball, too. You just don't typically stay overnight or stay the whole weekend. A lot of times you do for football and baseball season, and we love it. We love it when you guys come to visit, and let me just say welcome home. Welcome home. You'll be here sooner than you know it. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.